I grew up with three older sisters, and I'm not going to lie, like at times that was a little unique and a little bit of a challenge, because it's definitely different than growing up with three brothers, if you know what I'm talking about. Because in our home, instead of barbells, we had Barbies. You know what I'm talking about? Instead of dump trucks, we had dolls, and instead of Mighty Machines, we had a ton of makeup. It was just the reality, okay? And I love my sisters. They are truly awesome. I don't hold a grudge against them, just because when I was little, they used to dress me up as their little baby and play house with me. No, I'm over that. I'm just getting it off my chest here. You know what I'm saying? It's all good. But I can remember one Christmas when one of my sisters announced that she was buying her own Christmas gift from her husband. She wanted some jewelry, and so she just bought it and placed it under the tree. But it wasn't just that Christmas. She did that more than once. Kind of from that day forward, almost every year, she would wrap something, put it under the tree, and be like, oh, wow, this is so great. Thank you so much. And I'm like, who does that, right? I just did that, okay? Wasn't jewelry, but it was something else. And before you judge me, I want to know, okay, I'm going to ask the question. Terwilliger, you join me here as well. If you're watching online, go order yours now. Show of hands, how many of you have ever bought your own Christmas present? Let me see here. Okay, see, there's quite a bit of us. See, my reasoning for doing it was this. I'm just saving Marla the agony of thinking about what to get me. And on top of that, I'm ensuring I get what I want. And on top of that, I'm actually helping make Christmas good for all of us. You know what I'm saying? It's really a nice thing to do. And I'm happy to see that I'm not alone on this. There's so many helpful people here. That's great. But let's be real and honest. That kind of defeats the purpose of a gift, doesn't it? And if we peel another layer off here, what this reveals is maybe just a form of selfishness. Like, I want to make sure I get what I want. I don't trust others to figure it out, and therefore I feel the need to do this. Now, every single one of us knows that selfishness is thinking of ourselves before others, and we can spot it pretty quickly in someone else. It's just a little bit more difficult to see in ourselves. And I believe one of the things that underscores selfishness is insecurity. And insecurity, on the other hand, is something that we can all see in ourselves. Insecurity has this way of just keeping our eyes, our focus, and our mind on us. Now, a lot of people struggle with insecurity. It's kind of feeling like we don't measure up to someone's expectations, or we don't really fit in, or we're not beautiful enough, or smart enough, or rich enough, or even good enough. And when we feel this way, all we are truly thinking about is ourselves. We're worried about us and how we will look. You already know we're in a series this December entitled Missing Christmas. And this series reminds us that we can become so focused on all the wrong things during this season that we actually miss the main event. It's kind of like when I do a wedding. Every time on the wedding day, I say to the couple, I say, okay, take today in, because all your planning, all your prep, you can't change anything in the moment. Don't worry about it. Just don't miss the moment of the day. And so this year, I want to say to you, don't miss Christmas. Don't miss the wonder and the significance of God incarnate, Jesus coming to earth. Don't let the distractions blur your focus. Don't let some good thing cause you to miss what this season is really all about. And the truth is, our distractions, they're not really all that bad. They just, in the end, keep us from what is best. They keep us from focusing on the things that we really need to be focusing on. Now, when Jesus was born, a lot of people missed it. And I kind of get why. There was a lot to be preoccupied with. There was a lot to be distracted with. There was the census going on. And what it meant was that every person alive in the Roman world had to make sure that they registered. And for a lot of people, they had to travel to do this. So it took time, it took energy, it took effort, it took money. These were good people doing life. And yet they missed the coming of Jesus because, like us, they were just hectic and busy, moving from one thing to the next, just trying to cope, really, in doing their life. And in the midst of it all, they somehow got distracted. They lost focus. And we all get that, don't we? So I want to take you to the Christmas story as recorded in the New Testament of the Bible. And this morning, I want to talk about two ways of navigating our focus at Christmas, two perspectives we can have. And the first one is from a character that really is the villain in the story. And we all know that every good plot needs a villain, and this one is no different. This guy's name is King Herod, or Herod the Great, and he really was the villain upon villains. He was the Lex Luthor, the Darth Vader, the Grinch, and Thanos all rolled into one here, okay? He was the Scrooge of the original Christmas story, someone whose heart was never touched and just whose heart remained hard as stone. And he might have been the one that, there's a theologian called John Calvin, he might have been the one that he was thinking of when he came up with the theology of the total depravity of humanity. Why? Check this out. When people got in Herod's way, when others didn't fulfill or do what he wanted, he did what he only knew how to do, and that was he eliminated them or he killed them. Historian Paul Mayer said that we have a whole lot written on Herod the Great, two whole scrolls by Josephus that tell us how evil this man really was. And check this out. We read that he was this paranoid tyrant who ended up killing three of his sons on suspicion of treason. He put to death his favorite wife out of his 10 wives. He killed one of his mother-in-laws. And I'm like, well, you did have 10, okay? So, kidding. He drowned a high priest. He killed several uncles and some of his cousins. And the scrolls also talk about how he actually had this plan devised to kill a stadium of Jewish leaders. Caesar Augustus said he would rather be Herod's pig than his son. So this guy was intimidating, all right? He was feared, he was hated. And what we realize is all these heinous crimes were driven by his own insecurities, by his own tension. We could really say that he was Herod the insecure. And so I want to tell you what happened in the context of the coming of Jesus. The biblical Christmas story, as recorded by a writer called Matthew, which is also subsequently the first book of the New Testament in the Bible. So one day, magi or wise men come wandering into Jerusalem. And this is the place where Herod ruled, but his kingdom expanded further than just that place. Now, these wise men were rich somebodies. They were from the east, and they carried with them a little bit of presence. They were known, so to speak. They were revered. They were respected. If they had social media, their accounts would be lit up with followers, and they came to Bethlehem with a question. Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? Hashtag new king. Hashtag he's got a star. Hashtag beat that Herod, if you know what I'm saying, right? And then we read the following. When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed. Now that word disturbed means troubled. It means having emotional trauma. His security was immediately shaky. It's kind of like he thought things were good. He thought he had eliminated all the threats, but now there was this new threat. And one little question literally caused him to shake up the town, his life, and his future. Do you ever have that? Like things are going fine for you and then you hear one comment from someone and everything just falls off the hinges? Like the comment could have been from a person who doesn't really matter, but it still just gets under your skin, right? It eats at you. You can't sleep because of it. You think about it at the weirdest times and it robs you. And like Herod, you get a little bit disturbed. You get troubled. It causes you emotional trauma. It actually causes you to get a little bit stressed. And if you're like me, maybe it's in those times when you're stressed, you just eat just a little bit more chocolate. You know what I'm saying? And just so you know, it's totally natural to do this. Stressed out people eat more chocolate. You want to know why? Because stress spelled backwards is dessert. So it's all good. You can do this. It's okay. All right. But when we're in that space, what many of us do is we feel that we need to go into defense mode. We want to underline and protect what we have and who we are. We want to justify our words and our attitudes. When we feel threatened, we kind of do everything we can to protect what we hold. And in a moment, I'm going to show you how Herod did this. But first, I just want to say this. Our insecurities cause us to do absolute absurdities. Our insecurities cause us to do absolute absurdities. It's kind of like the young adult who called his mom and said, "Mom, I finally found the woman of my dreams." And his mom's like, "Thank you, Jesus, finally, right? And I got an idea. Send her flowers and invite her over for supper." And so he's like, "Yeah, great idea." And so it was the day after the date, and his mom phones the guy and says, "How did last night go?" And he's like, "Oh, Mom, it was terrible. It was a disaster. It was so bad." And the mom's like, "No, well, what happened? Didn't she come over?" And the guy's like, "Yeah, she came over, but she refused to cook." You know, our insecurities cause us to do absolute absurdities. It's kind of like the girl who's very controlling of her peer group and monopolizes them. And really, she just needs her followers to idolize her to help her feel good about herself. It's the spouse who feels unattractive, and so they seek sexual fulfillment somewhere else. It's the employee who works nonstop to the ignorance of their family just so that they feel appreciated. It's like Herod and his response to the wise men. Our insecurities cause us to do absolute absurdities. And can I just ask you, what are you insecure about? Is it a skill set? Is it a position in life? Is it the stability of your marriage? Is it your looks? You see, insecurity keeps our focus on the wrong place, and what we need is a shift in focus. And so let me take you back to when the wise men approached Jerusalem. They come in and they ask, "Where's the one born king of the Jews?" And Herod, you know what he does? He immediately freaks out and he calls together all the chief priests and all the teachers of the law. He basically calls together all who's who in Jerusalem, the power people, the influencers. He gets this cabinet around him and he asks them this question: "Where is the Christ supposed to be born?" Now, I want you to think about that question just for a moment. It's a little weird because it indicates that Herod knew a Messiah was coming. Realize he didn't ask, "Who is this king that the wise men are asking about?" He asked, "Where's the Christ going to be born?" He knew enough about the prophecies that this will one day happen. And I personally think he got those guys together in hopes that they would just underscore or support his perspective, in hopes that they would kind of calm him down and say, "Oh, Herod, you got nothing to worry about, man. It's going to be okay." You see, the truth is, he wasn't really asking for information. He was asking for validation. Herod wanted them to say, "Oh, you're the best. You're the king. We follow you. Don't worry about this baby being born. Don't worry about this supposed new king." But instead, he heard this. "In Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." And as he's listening to it, you can see him going ding, 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 right? Threats, warnings, pressure. Immediately, Herod's insecurity spikes to 12 out of 10. And then he does something absurd. In order to protect himself, he comes up with this plan. And his plan was he's going to find this baby and have him killed. And so he meets with the wise men and he says this: "Go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." So he lies to them. In fact, we're told that he did this in a secret meeting with the wise men. Now, just understand, back in those days, kings would never do that. They would never meet secretly with guests or strangers they didn't know that well, because for a king, it was all about displaying their greatness and their hospitality, not about side room conversations. When we're driven by our insecurities, we do things we would never, ever do. I mean, Herod pulled a secret meeting because he felt threatened and shaken. And our insecurities can actually drive us to dark places. And I want you to notice something else here. His insecurity affected everyone around him. We read that not only Herod, but all Jerusalem was disturbed by the question of the wise men. Our insecurity can create insecurity in others. It's kind of like it's catchy. It can spread like a virus. And so some time passes, and Herod, he never hears back from the wise men, and he realizes that these guys were onto him. He also realizes that he's not going to find this new baby called Jesus, and this is when he does the most absurd thing. I want to read you what he does. It says this: "When Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi, He was furious, and he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under, in accordance with the time he had learned from the Magi. Our insecurities cause us to do absolute absurdities. Herod was so insecure about losing his position as king. He was so insecure about the people's trust in his leadership. He knew at some time that Christ was coming, but in turn, he couldn't take his eyes off himself. He was so preoccupied with himself that the opportunity to rewrite history seemed more appealing. And instead of leading his people toward their preferred destiny, he threatens their destiny by creating tragedy, fear, and devastation. You see, when we're driven by our insecurities, we're going to find ourselves doing things we never thought we would be doing. It's kind of why we manipulate a situation or a person. It's why we find ourselves doing things in secret. It's also why we can be angry or frustrated and filled with tension. Herod was so worried about himself that he couldn't take his eyes off himself to look to the one who would save him from himself. And insecurity always keeps our focus on the wrong thing. And in so doing, we actually miss out on the very right thing needed in our lives. And Herod missed out on what Jesus brought. And what did Jesus bring? An Old Testament prophet by Isaiah says it this way: "For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders. And he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace." These things can't be found focusing on our insecurities. Peace is never found focusing on ourselves. So that's one way to approach and look at Christmas. The wise men, however, give us another way. They were really the antithesis of Herod. Their response helped them realize this most amazing historical event. They said this: "We saw his star and have come to worship him." And then we read, "When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshiped him." Three times we read, "When they saw, when they saw, when they saw." Their focus, their gaze, their eyes were on something completely outside of themselves. Their eyes were intent on finding Jesus. And because of that, they eventually did find him, and it drove them to worship. See, when we shift our eyes off ourselves, off our worries, off our insecurities, off our selfish wants and desires, off everything that can so easily distract us, we see what can only be seen when looking at Jesus. And in order to not miss Christmas, we have to focus on something outside of ourselves, something greater, something stronger, something that brings the meaning and the underlying stability every single one of us is longing for. And that, my friends, is in Jesus himself. What's interesting is the wording that the writer Matthew uses in this passage as he's describing this event. And I want to take you to this wording again. He writes this: "After they had heard the king," remember that, "they went on their way, and the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshiped him." So what we read here is that they heard Herod, but they saw the star. They heard Herod, but they saw the child. What you hear and what you choose to focus on affects your outcome. So friends, what voices are you listening to? Herod heard the question from the wise men and focused on something what he felt was a threat. The wise men heard Herod, but they saw something greater that ultimately eliminated their threat. So what voices are causing you to shift your focus, to maybe get distracted? What voices are causing you to look more to yourself than to Jesus? Most of you probably know of, or at least heard of, the golf legend called Arnold Palmer. And he recalls a lesson in his life on focus, and he writes this in his book. He says, "It was the final hole of the 1961 Masters tournament. I had a one-stroke lead and had just hit a very satisfying tee shot. I felt I was in pretty good shape. As I approached my ball, I saw an old friend standing at the edge of the gallery. He motioned me over, stuck out his hand, and said, 'Congratulations.' I took his hand and shook it, but as soon as I did, I knew I had lost my focus. On my next two shots, I hit the ball into a sand trap, then put it over the edge of the green. I missed a putt, and I lost the Masters. The writer of a New Testament book called Hebrews says it this way. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Here it is, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Fixing our eyes on Jesus. It means to be dead, set, and locked looking to him. It means that nothing sways us. There's a wisdom book in the Old Testament. It's called Proverbs, and they write it this way, the writer. Look straight ahead and fix your eyes on what lies before you. Mark out a straight path for your feet. Stay on the safe path. Don't get sidetracked. Friends, we can actually miss the wonder of the season. We can miss the purpose of Jesus coming because at times we can be too preoccupied with ourselves, with our own insecurities. And just so you know, I'm not downplaying those things. I'm just saying when our focus is on them, we miss what Christ actually wants to bring to our lives. And a shift in focus is needed to experience and encounter all that Jesus offers. And what does he offer? He wants to be your Prince of Peace. He wants to be your everlasting Father. He wants to be your mighty God. He wants to be your wonderful Counselor. So take your eyes off yourself. Shift your focus off of your insecurities. Fix your eyes on a child in a manger. On a God who became man. On a Savior for humanity. On a King who humbled himself and became nothing in order to die and make us something. Jesus came as a child. He lived a sinless life. He exemplified the way to God. He died on the cross to take all those things that you and I are insecure about, to take all our sins, to grant us forgiveness. And then he rose to say, I've conquered everything for you. Keep your focus on me. You know, it was getting really close to Christmas. And one lady, she had realized that she still hadn't sent out her Christmas cards. And so she quickly rushed to the store. She had 49 people on her list. And she went out and bought a box of 50 cards. And so she got home, quickly signed them all, and sent them all off. And then Christmas Day, when things were a little bit less hectic, she sat down and pulled out the one card that was still left over. And as she opened it, she read these words. This card is just to say, a little gift is on its way. You see? When our focus is off, when we're distracted, we can miss some of the vital details of the story. And so friends, as you continue to go on in this month, there's essentially two ways to approach this season. With the path of the wise men, and here's a secret, there's a reason why they're called wise, okay? Or with the angst of Herod. May you keep your eyes fixed on Jesus, the author, the perfecter of your faith. And so what I want to do is I actually just want to give you a practical take home this week for those moments when you feel like your focus is swaying or it's shifting or it's moving into something that maybe doesn't even really matter. When you realize that you're losing focus, I'm going to give you an 8-word prayer to say, and it's simply this. Jesus, help me keep my focus on you. It's simple. Jesus, help me keep my focus on you. When you find yourself in angst over something someone said, Jesus, help me keep my focus on you. When you feel your insecurities creep up, Jesus, help me keep my focus on you. When you become overwhelmed by your day, by your circumstance, by your situation, Jesus, help me keep my focus on you. Jesus, help me keep my focus on you. And you want to know something? Here's what I can promise you. If you go with those 8 words, if you go into this month with that prayer, I promise you, you will not miss Christmas. Jesus, help me keep my focus on you. Keep your eyes fixed on Jesus. Amen. I'm going to ask you to stand, please, if you can. I just want to pray in closing. God, there's so many things in this season and in this time that can literally distract us from the main thing about what we celebrate in the weeks ahead. And so I pray for every single one of us that our focus is completely on you. I pray that you help us with no matter what we're navigating, no matter what we're going through, whether it is insecurities, whether it is circumstances and situations where we just need you, I pray that you give us the heart, the desire, and the ability to say, may we keep our focus on you. May we not get caught up in things that don't matter. May we not get sidetracked. May we not forget in the midst of everything going on that this is truly about you. And as we focus on you, God, you change our world. You change our lives. You bring that peace. You bring that understanding. You bring that wholeness. And it drives us, like the wise men, to worship you. And so I pray that that may be central in every single one of our lives over the weeks ahead. You know, maybe you're here and you're saying it's just in this season that you're starting to focus really in on who Jesus is, and it's new for you. You've never really gone down this path, or you did a long time ago, and you're re-engaging with faith or with understanding who Jesus is. And if you're here today and you're saying, you know what, I want to make that decision to fully focus on Jesus, to make him Lord and leader of my life, I'm going to pray a prayer, and you can just pray along with me, and it's as simple as that, of just a prayer offered in faith that allows you to start this journey. So just pray with me. As I'm here, I recognize my need for you, Jesus. And so I ask you to come into my life. I ask you to forgive me. I thank you that you bring just a clear focus for living. I thank you that you died, that you rose again. You offer forgiveness and you offer life for now and forevermore. And so I truly want to focus on you for my life. And I just give you all that I am. I pray that I make you Lord and leader over everything. And Jesus, I pray for every individual, for every couple, and for every family represented here. I pray strength, wisdom, guidance, and blessing as they go out into this week. I pray that you go before them. I pray that you give them just the ability to walk and to know you greater and deeper and to shine a light to our great city of Edmonton. God, I pray that their focus in this season may be completely on Jesus. And I pray that in his most powerful, awesome, and precious name. Amen. You know, if you're here and you prayed that prayer of surrendering your life to Christ, maybe for the first time, or a rededication prayer, can I ask you to text the word life to 555-888? We would love to get a digital booklet in your hand that talks a little bit more about what it means to follow Jesus. And just if you want, it'll also give you an opportunity to connect with one of our pastors on our staff. Also, friends, know this, if you desire prayer about anything in your life, we're going to have some prayer team available down at the front right after the service. You know, my heart for you as you go into this week is simply fix your eyes on Jesus. Remember, Jesus, help me keep my focus on you. Thanks for being here. Have an incredible Sunday. God bless.